Come try new Skyline Dip Cholitos at your neighborhood Skyline today. A warm, soft tortilla filled with their amazing chili and cheese with an extra layer of cream cheese and crunchy Fritos corn chips. At participating Skyline restaurants for a limited time.
The spring portion of the offseason is over. Time for players to take a break. We'll probably take a break. And then it's full steam ahead with training camp. And we are going to sum up the spring here. We'll get into a lot of things here on the Flight Plan Podcast. Thanks for joining us, Tim McMaster, along with Zach Rosenblatt. I hate to say this cliche, smash the like button. Give us a five-star review if you're listening to us on Apple or Spotify. As we're almost a year into now, like, the new, I guess, identity of this show, but still like to get those, that helps keep things rolling if you can get those reviews in. I mentioned a lot to get to. We'll sum up camp. We'll talk about some of the news this week. Sauce Gardner spoke, of course. Breece Hall spoke. We'll do stock up, stock down on a couple of players as well. And we'll kind of talk about what other people are thinking about this Jets offense right now, including the Athletic Football Show, who weighed in on their thoughts. Overall, though, Zach, you finished a mini camp. Honeymoon's on the horizon. Are you just in a good place right now?
Yeah. It's like school's out for the summer, and I get to celebrate my summer break in Greece. So it's when you plan a wedding, like it's like it was fun to plan it, but it's like it feels like a lot of work. Whereas I feel like a honeymoon, it feels like the reward. So like planning the honeymoon has been a lot of fun, and we have a lot of stuff booked. I'm very excited about that. And as I've said in the Discord and to people, I fully expect the Jets to have some sort of big news while I'm out there, whether that's a Sauce or Garrett contract or a signing or something, just because that's just how this goes. They're going to do it when it's least convenient for me. I mean, I won't come off vacation. Like, I'm not leaving my honeymoon. I'm actually going to try and unplug. I'm really bad at that. I'm going to try and unplug as much as I can, but very excited to get on the sands of Greece and I think my blood is going to be replaced by hummus and tzatziki by the time I get back.
I want a picture of you on like a hill, like one of those cities kind of built on the hillside with the white buildings and the beautiful like turquoise water, and you on your cell phone.
I should recreate that photo on every trip I go on now. That's a good idea.
Yeah, like Paris,
like a landmark.
Greece.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
All right, let's get right into it. Aaron Glenn's first spring is now in the books. Just overall, like broad thoughts about like how this played out in your mind compared to springs past under other regimes.
I generally try not to put too much weight on anything that happens in the spring. I think, I think a misconception is because I do these observations and I, for fun, track the quarterback stats, people like will extrapolate from that and ignore everything else I say. But so they'll be like, oh, they're making too much of a defensive lineman winning his matchup or a quarterback, how he's playing well or bad. I think it's important not to put too much weight on anything that happens here. It's just more interesting when you see things and guys emerge and guys you're like, oh, I haven't really heard from that guy in a while, or the guy's been banged up, so he's falling behind, all that stuff. But anyway, very encouraged just about the program that Aaron Glenn is running. You know, the fact that I think he said they had 91% attendance throughout the entire offseason program, which is really high. And he said he's never had above 80 in his time as a coach. So the buy-in is there. I mean, I think there's a part of it that this is a very young roster. So like the veterans that maybe would skip it historically are not even on this roster. So that's probably part of it. But yeah, I think all the right things are being said. I think everybody's flowing in the same direction. It is very early. We'll see if that matters when the season starts. If they start losing, culture can die pretty quickly if you start losing a lot of games. So there's a lot to be done. I think there is a lot of question marks about this team, but I came out of it there encouraged, especially by Aaron Glenn, Tanner Engstrand, Steve Wilks, Chris Banjo, but also like to a degree, Justin Fields, and we can get into that in a second. But yeah, I'd say overall, the vibe I get is the training camp's going to be fun because I think it's going to be an intense training camp. I one of the topics of conversation the last couple of days, because Steve Wilks was asked about Sauce Gardner's tackling particularly, and someone asked him, like, how do you practice tackling this time of the year? And he said it's become challenging, but that Aaron Glenn has made it a point that he wants to tackle in training camp, and we haven't seen that in a while. Like, there's a lot of teams that don't do that. It's pretty common now, and I asked Aaron Glenn, he's like, well, it's hard to, the things that you're going to be doing in the game, it's hard to, expect these guys to to do it well if you're not practicing it with them. So, like, I don't think there it's going to be like, you know, bone crushing hits. He said we have to have a quick whistle and things like that. But I'm looking forward to a physical training camp. I hope we see more O-line versus D-line matchups, because I think that's kind of gone by the wayside with Saleh, who ran a pretty light training camp. And I think you saw the effects of that as the season went along, because the fundamentals in particular were a problem, and they've really, really honed in on the fundamentals in the spring. I mean, the practices like for the spring were intense, not like intense actual practices, but they were intense enough that like their third mini camp practice yesterday was pretty light. Like they had offensive linemen running routes for fun, to the point where like Michael Carter was like, I was a little surprised, just because that's like, you know, we go in expecting, you know, you're supposed to be all in competitiveness, all that stuff. So, positive training camp. I wouldn't say I feel better or worse about this team coming out of it, but I feel maybe better about Glenn's ability to be a first-time head coach than I maybe expected.
One thing we have talked about, you mentioned the attendance super high, and obviously a part of that has been Sauce Gardner mostly. He missed a little, but he was there for minicamp. He was there for some of the OTAs, and mostly quiet, although he did have the tweet that we mentioned last week when PFF ranked him as the number one cornerback in the NFL, and the fact that he gave that some love. But he did speak this week, and Sauce is interesting because, you know, I think we've seen enough of Sauce that, you know, is like his heart's in the right place in a lot of this stuff, but sometimes he doesn't always say what you'd want him to say as a team. It's all fine as far as we're concerned. But he really, it was good this week. You know, here's a guy that deserves a contract. I think we can say that. You've said that you think him and Garrett should absolutely be signed this offseason before the season starts to new deals. Negotiations are ongoing, but he's there. He's not, you know, being a problem. And he spoke this week. So let's hear from him, and then you can weigh in on your thoughts on Sauce right now.
Man, I just wanted to show my teammates, show the coaches how much I'm bought into this, man. I want to win. I want to change the organization. I want to be a part of changing the organization. You know, we got a new regime, you know, AG, his whole coaching staff that he brought in, Moogie, you know, just great guys. And I feel like Mr. Johnson did a great job at getting those type of guys to be here. And I feel like they're doing a great job in changing the culture for sure.
Are you optimistic we'll get done extension-wise between now and
then? I'm letting my team handle that. You know, my main focus is being the best football player I could be, you know, but my team and the Jets have been talking, and, you know, I feel pretty good about how the talks have been going.
Some cliches even in there.
Yeah, I mean, he handled that as well as he could. I will say it's been, because of my first year covering the team was him and Garrett's first year, but with Sauce in particular, it's been cool kind of seeing the progression of him, like, maturity-wise. Like, you can see him standing up there. I think he thinks more about what he's saying. He's really well thought and well spoken, and I just appreciate, like, he does his best to keep it real with us too. So I really enjoy covering Sauce. But yeah, I'd say, you know, he didn't have to, like, I think it's a little rarer for guys he's in his fourth year this year. Yeah, coming off their third year. I think it's a little more rare for them to hold out, but you know, the way things go in the NFL now, star players hold out when they want a new deal. And I know he wants a new deal, and I know Garrett wants a new deal. And both those guys were there for almost the entire offseason program. I know Sauce missed at least one OTA practice. But, I mean, he's all in on – I think he's handling it the right way. I think there's something to be said about showing up when you want more money. I think he wants to be the highest paid corner in the NFL. He wouldn't admit that. He wouldn't even answer that question. But from what I heard, that's what he wants. So – and I think that's a perfectly reasonable request, even if it's like 1 cent more than Derek Stingley makes, which is like, so it's $30 million a year plus 1 cent. And ultimately the APY doesn't actually matter, which it gets overblown when these contracts are announced. It's about the guarantees. So he might have a higher APY. And I think Derek Stingley's contract was like a fake 30 per year kind of thing. So there's ways around it, but I think it would be smart to lock these guys up. I know the people who are against it say you don't have to, you have them under team control for two more years, blah, blah, blah. But it's the number's going to go up. And if you sign him now and make him the highest paid and Garrett a top 10 highest paid, like a year from now, they're going to drop down and Garrett will be the 15th highest paid and Sauce will be the fifth highest paid corner. Like that's just how it goes. So like you save money the earlier you do it ultimately. So, and as we've said, I mean, we're just going to keep repeating these topic points until they sign them. Like the Jets don't get guys like this many teams don't get two guys like this in the same draft class. You do not let them go. And I don't know how many times we can say the same stuff, because there's still people who push back on Sauce being great. It's ridiculous. It's because of last year. It's because he didn't have interceptions and he didn't tackle that well, but he was still one of the five to 10 best corners in the NFL. He is one of the 5 to 10 best corners in the NFL. I think his numbers are going to be better this year. Somebody asked him like how excited he is to be in this scheme that's like aggressive up front, which kind of is going to leave them more in man coverage on the back end, which he really wasn't with the last regime, and which means he'll probably be following star receivers more often. And he's like, I thank the staff every day, like Steve Wilkes, Aaron Glenn. I thank them every day because they're putting me in position to make plays, as opposed to where he felt like in the last defense, he had to go and make them. And they weren't often there for him, just the way that they were running that defense. So he had zero interceptions last year. The tackling he's working on the interceptions in particular. And that's the next step for him to becoming like a no doubt number one corner in the NFL. But pay these guys up. They are right. They're about the right things. They have the right approach. They're building blocks. He said he and Garrett talk about how they want to compete every day and practice against each other, because they're the building blocks of this team and everybody looks to them now. They are leaders on this team. They are veterans on this team, because you have like three guys that are 30 or older and most of them are like new to the team. So build around them, pay them, get it done. If I had to predict, I'd say at least one of them gets done before the season. I have a hard time believing they can sign just one of them and not the other.
Like, I mean, it should be a joint press conference.
Yeah,
right?
I was about to say.
They should come out together.
The easy play for the Jets is to do a whole big thing where you honor both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
But, you know, messaging has not always been the Jets' strong suit, so we'll see.
Yeah, so the other guy a lot of guys spoke, but another guy that spoke that that I want to get a clip on here is Breece Hall. Interesting offseason. There was, from what he talked about this week that isn't part of this clip, the injuries he suffered last year were maybe worse than we were led to believe at the time, and he battled through it. You could argue why not just rest.
He even said that he probably should have like sat out and rested, but he was trying to compete for the team, you know.
But he did speak this week, and let's hear from him, and then we'll talk about it. He talks about the trade talks, which were the big thing, right? Like leading up to the draft, there was all this chatter like, oh, will the Jets draft a running back and trade Breece Hall? And does that make sense? And all these things. And then Aaron Glenn had the comments about basically this is a competition at running back. We have three great running backs. He didn't say we have Breece Hall. He said we have three great running backs. Here's Breece.
I was seeing it just like everybody else was seeing it. But like I said, if you're not, people feel like you aren't doing your job, you're going to be replaced. So, it didn't happen. I'm here. AG called me and told me he wanted me to be here. For me, that meant a lot. But like I said, I'm here. I'm here to work. I'm here to do my job. So, and prove to them that I deserve to be here.
Did you talk when you saw those rumors pop up? Did you we'll see what happens? Or did you call Aaron? Did you call Darren just to see what
happens? Nah, at first I was just kind of like, okay, we'll just see what happens, you know. And then, you know, AG called me and, you know, told me that he's like, Breece, do you think I want to trade you? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, Breece, I don't want to trade you. So I want you to be here. You're going to be here. You're our running back. And so that felt really good. And then just to sit down with him and have a lot of long conversations and for him to fill me out, for me to, you know, get to know him and everything. It's been cool. And to see how our practices have gone and how competitive he likes it to be and, you know, how he likes to put the ball down and just let us play. It's been fun.
He also said they're going to run the ball, right? That was the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, we're actually going to run the ball.
I think that was my favorite part, because he often, under Hackett in particular, had a hard time biting his tongue, especially in the beginning of the season. I think in 2023, in like week two, he was already like complaining about his lack of touches, and it didn't get better. They had the least rushing attempts in the NFL last season. That was partly Aaron Rodgers checking out of runs. I think Breece liked Aaron as a teammate. He spoke highly of him, but I think it's clear he's like, Tanner loves to run the ball. And he's talking about how he watched a lot of Detroit. I'd put money on Breece having like a bounce back year, honestly. Like I think he's highly motivated, especially with all the trade talk, all the talk that he's not as good. He puts a lot of the blame for last season on himself. He did that last season too. Last season was not his fault, obviously. Like there were so many other factors, but he said it was a bad year for him. He says it, he admits it. He's someone who talks about wanting to rush for 2,000 yards and be one of the best running backs in the NFL. And you have, you know, we talked about this back in owners' meetings when Aaron Glenn alluded to like having three running backs that he can lean on. And I think they will play Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis a lot. If you look at the Lions, they've always ran like a two running back offense. So Braylon in particular, I think he'll get a lot of touches. But I believe in Breece. I believe that Tanner Engstrand has said all the right things. He said he's going to run the ball. And he was talking about how Breece is a good pass catcher. It took Nathaniel Hackett, I believe, 9 weeks into his first season as Jets offensive coordinator to realize that Breece Hall could catch the ball. Justin Fields is talking about how he was surprised to know how soft of hands Breece has. Like, he's like a receiver out there. Like, I think Breece is a number two option in this passing offense. And so he's going to be on the field a lot. Maybe he's not a bell cow, but I think he's going to touch the ball a lot. I think he's going to look more like he did 2 years ago than he did last year. And he's saying all the right things. Like, if he was as banged up at the end of last season, as he said he had a pretty serious knee injury that he was dealing with, but he's completely healed now. You know, Breece Hall healthy is an explosive running back. I don't think he's maybe as good as Jahmyr Gibbs, like all around, but like he can be the Jahmyr Gibbs of this offense, and Braylon Allen can be the David Montgomery or whatever. Like, because I think they are trying to line up a lot of the pieces they had in Detroit with what they had in have in New York right now. So, you know, again, I said this about Sauce. I say this about Garrett. I'll add Jermaine and Breece into that. Like, it's having four guys in one draft class that are not only that talented, but like just that good at the podium, let alone just like interview wise, but being that good at the podium and thoughtful, all four of them. Like, Jermaine had some great quotes the other day too. It was first press conference. You know, I asked him about, not to get sidetracked too much, but I just love this quote. Because Aaron Glenn mentioned how he spent some time with Jermaine at the Senior Bowl. And I'm like, what do you remember about that? He's like, honestly, all I remember is trying to rip everybody's face off at the Senior Bowl because I was pissed that I even had to go there. So, and Jermaine's funny because he like says these like very like kind of cocky things about himself, but he's like, and I say that being completely humble, like he understands how he sounds and he's not actually sounding humble, but it just reminds me of the song from the movie Pop Star where Andy Samberg has a song called I'm So Humble, where he's just saying all the ways he's so humble. But anyway, I love these guys as like a reporter covering them. They give us plenty of content, great quotes. And Breece is in that group. I think there's times in the past where he can be like moody when things aren't going his way and maybe he doesn't want to talk to the media, but anytime he's at the podium, he's really good with us. And I think he's going to bounce back this year. I really do.
All right, let's move on to stock up and stock down. You have a full article on this out on The Athletic. We're just going to focus in on a couple positions. Before we actually do what stock is up and what stock is down, let's touch base with Justin Fields, though, because he's neither. I think it's fair to say he is. I mean, is it fair to say at this point he is what we thought he is, thought he was, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, him in particular, with the point I was making earlier about it being early, like, it's just too early to evaluate him. Like, he's not Aaron Rodgers, where Aaron Rodgers is going to look amazing in these settings no matter what, because he flick of the wrist, he can do whatever he wants. Accuracy-wise, if he knows he's not getting hit, Aaron Rodgers is going to just, like, have some fun, no looks, all that stuff. Justin Fields, physically, is really, really fun to watch. You can see the athleticism, his ability to go and make plays with his feet. He has a cannon for an arm, and I think in minicamp was the best he looked out of all the practices that we got to watch. You know, he made to on I think it was Wednesday, he had a fantastic deep ball to Garrett Wilson where he just like landed it in his breadbasket. Garrett beat Brandon Stevens, but Fields had to place it in the right spot for it to get to Garrett. Garrett got it. He got tackled at the 1 yard line, and then a couple plays later, Justin Fields, look, I know he knew he wasn't actually able to get hit, so that's important to be said, but he had a few guys in his face, not a clear line of eyesight to Josh Reynolds, and he found him with a perfect throw to the back of the end zone for a touchdown. Those plays were encouraging. The one that Aaron Glenn called out as encouraging, I think some people kind of laughed at it, but he's like, the play that really stuck out to me is when he scrambled out of the pocket and he threw it away instead of forcing something. And I think maybe some Jets fans didn't love to hear that because that was kind of like the way Robert Saleh would praise Zach Wilson all the time. But I would say I'm encouraged. I don't feel better or worse about Fields. I am encouraged. I think his teammates love him. They have it every stop, and the running part, it's just going to be fun to watch. Like, he, you hope that he does, his instinct isn't just to run when things are breaking down. If like the first read's not there, I think that's been an issue for him in the past, but you know, I think he's in the right environment, maybe the best like supporting, not supporting cast, but supportive environment that he's been in terms of coaching. Cause I believe in Tanner Engstrand. I know there's questions about him, but I think he's going to be, this isn't a high bar. He's going to be better than any offensive coordinator they've had in a minute, I would say. Maybe since John Morton, who I thought was solid, he's more creative, I think. Comes from the Ben Johnson tree. I think the difference, I'm getting off track here. We can talk about Tanner later. Anyway, so Justin Fields.
Stay on the rundown, Zach.
On the rundown. This is my ADHD. It happens. but yeah, so, you know, any criticism I think is too early. Any all-out praise of him is too early. But I'm encouraged by the skill set. I see the ceiling. I also see the floor. Like, you see some of the stuff that he's been criticized for. Like, early in camp, he's holding onto the ball too long. Or there's been some inaccuracies on guys that were open. Like, that absolutely is happening. So he has not been perfect. But I was encouraged that he got better as the practices went on, I would say.
All right, let's go to receivers for stock up, stock down.
Yeah.
Stock up, Jamal Pritchett, South Alabama, undrafted, and catching some eyes.
Yeah, and that ties in with stock down. I had Xavier Gibson. I think they kind of go hand in hand, both because they physically kind of look similar, but and you kind of alluded to this before we got on the pod. Like, it feels like a similar track for Pritchett to when Gibson came in as a UDFA a couple years ago. Nobody was talking about him. Went to a smaller school, Stephen F. Austin, I believe. Jamal Pritchett, South Alabama, 5'8". Returner is his primary job. He's making some plays in the passing game. So I think the coaches really like him. Chris Bandra, the special teams coordinator, has raved about him a bit. Xavier Gibson is the favorite to be punt returner. He's the incumbent, but I think Pritchett is somebody to keep an eye on. He think he's somebody in training camp. He's going to be a Xavier Gibson type that the fans really fall in love with. There's always a few guys every year. I think he's going to be somebody like that. And I'm curious to see how he looks in like the preseason. Like, that's going to be big for him because this is a open competition. Xavier Gibson is not guaranteed anything. He had that punt return touchdown in week one of 2023 and hasn't really done anything since. Hasn't done anything on offense. So I think he's been a little disappointing and from the hype he got in the beginning to now. So there's a window here to win this job away. And Jamal Pritchett is the early favorite in my mind to like push Xavier Gibson for that job.
It's just like that insight into the NFL monster, right? That like,
yeah,
just lifts guys up 2 years ago, like Hard Knocks superstar. Here he is. Like, everybody feels good. Everyone loves him. And then 2 years later, oh, here's the new you, by the way. And, you know, it's just, it's life in the NFL. It's yeah. Tough business. Staying with receivers, one more stock down that we've talked a little bit about, but things just haven't gotten better because he's not on the field. Malachi Corley.
Yeah, you know, it's not, he's fallen behind. That's like the, and I think Aaron Glenn and Tanner Engstrand have had a hard time like even hiding that fact. I'll even read Tanner's quote because I thought it was pretty good. Here, I have it right here. He said, so they asked like, you know, he basically said, that's a great question really for him to ask. How do I get myself mentally caught back up because I wasn't able to get the physical reps this spring? Ultimately, that's going to be what it is because the other guys do. They have a handful of practices ahead of him and those physical reps. So he's going to have to find a way to catch himself up with that stuff. So they're basically like putting the onus on him. Like, you fell behind. You got banged up in the beginning of the offseason program and you were not on the practice field. And the old cliche, you can't make the club from the tub. Like, that's kind of what they've been alluding to. He hasn't been out there. He's somebody that I have this in the story. And, you know, I know Will Parkinson has been all over this too. You know, I think last year they were very hyped on him. They overhyped him probably. They kept making sure to tell everybody. They tried trading into the second round to get him. You know, there was I can't remember if Joe Douglas overtly said it or if it was reported, but that they had him ranked ahead of Brian Thomas. I don't know if that's true or not, but like the fact that even is a possibility does not look good. And then I think when he came in, it was clear he was going to be both a project as a receiver and just as like an adult. Like, I think there's some immaturity issues there and he's had to learn how to grow up. He's been the guy his whole life, especially in college where he was an absolute star. He was pursued by all these big time programs, stayed at Western Kentucky, gets to the NFL. I think he expected a certain thing to be like treated like he was a star and he hadn't earned that yet. And so I think, you know, last year was a wake up call for him. You hope you learn the right lessons, but he has a long way to go. This is a new staff, to not draft him. They're not as invested in him. And they're going to need him to prove that he deserves to be on the field. He has a unique skill set that nobody else in their receiver room has, with the after the catch stuff, the yak king. You can be a gadget player. This is a creative offensive coordinator. Should be a more creative offense. They should be able to find a way to use him. But he has to learn the system. He has to learn the routes. And he has to be willing to play on special teams. And he has to do all this stuff that, you know, kind of kept him off the field last year. So it's a big, it's as important summer for him as anybody, I would argue, because he's fighting for his job. Like, I mean, he's not a lock to make the team. Like, he needs to prove that he deserves to be here for a new coaching staff. So he's not off to a good start in that regard. And like I wrote in there, these other guys have gotten the reps ahead of him. And so they're ahead of him in the pecking order. Tyler Johnson, I mean, Josh Reynolds, Xavier Gibson, even Jamal Pritchett, Arian Smith, who was also banged up actually at the end of camp, but he's the guy that this coaching staff drafted and has raved about. So he's fallen behind all these people that got all the physical reps. And so now training camp, there's going to be extra pressure on him to prove that he is the player that he thinks he is and that the previous coaching staff thought he was.
All right, moving on to cornerback. Stock up, Azaria Thomas. Stock down, Brandon Stevens, which doesn't look great just because when they signed Brandon Stevens, there was a lot of questions about the contract and all of that. And now coming out of the spring, he's in your stock down.
Yeah, again, like I want to caution, like I'm not saying it's a bust and he's going to be bad, but like some of the question marks, and the coaching staff is going to work on it with him. Like when he was in Baltimore, he was really good at like staying with receivers, but he always had trouble turning his head around and making a play on the ball. And I saw that happen a few times in the practices we saw, especially against Garrett Wilson. So no, everybody's going to have a hard time covering Garrett Wilson, but also there's going to be star receivers they go against. There's going to be teams of two star receivers that they go against. I mean, they played the Bengals this year, for example. And so he's going to have to step up. And I think there's pressure on him both because of Azaria's presence. Azaria had a great spring, I thought. He mostly played against backups, but he had a great spring, made plays on the ball. I believe he had a couple picks even. Very encouraged by him, but the goal is not to play him much this year. The goal is to start Brandon Stevens. So, you know, they're coming off a couple of years where they had DJ Reed, Sauce Gardner, and Michael Carter II as arguably the best corner trio in the NFL. And so Brandon Stevens has to fill DJ Reed's shoes. And so there's going to be pressure on him because of the contract, because of the way fans were maybe upset about how much they gave a guy they didn't really know much about, and the numbers didn't look great in Baltimore. So he's someone who needs to have a better summer. But more importantly, I mean, he's going to be their starter in week one as long as he's healthy. Like, I think we can write that in pencil. But, you know, he needs to step up and kind of improve on some of the things that he struggled with in Baltimore.
And then Thomas is, you kind of, any more on Thomas or?
No, I was very encouraged by him and Malachi Moore, the fourth round pick. I think these are guys that have a great coaching staff of defensive. We've gone over this, but their defensive back coaching room is stellar. So whether they play a lot this year or not, I think Malachi will probably play more, at least initially, but they have the developmental, you know, they have a ceiling and they have the coaching staff to develop them to get there. And Azaria in particular, out of this rookie class, if not the best, he looked like one of the best guys in these practices.
Just looking through the chat, and Taylor Delgado throws out, and this is, I think, backing things up to Malachi Corley. If he has a bad summer, would they cut him?
I don't know. I go back and forth on that. Again, I think Joe Douglas was someone who wasn't keen on cutting draft picks, but this isn't this staff's draft pick. So if he has a bad summer and, you know, let's say you're keeping either Gibson or Jamal Pritchett as the punt returner, you have Tyler Johnson, you have Arian Smith, Josh Reynolds, Alan Lazard, and Garrett Wilson. That's already like six receivers. So, and if Malachi is not standing out on special teams, like what's his role? I think he makes the team. Like if I'm making a 53-man roster projection, he's on it, but could I see a scenario where he doesn't make the team? Yeah, I could see that. Like I wouldn't rule it out completely. It would be not a great look for the previous regime, I guess. It doesn't really affect this one, but it would just be unfortunate because I do think he has talent. Like I really do, but he needs to put in the work and show the level of maturity that it takes to be successful in the NFL. So there's a way to go.
Okay. we've reached the point in the season where really everyone starts to really look ahead to the season. And yeah. It's also the part of the season where there's less content to just cover. So you're seeing countdowns and tiers and who's the best this and who's the worst that. And it's only going to get worse over the month, you know, until training camps open. The Athletic, we'll do it with anyone, you know, same sort of things. And the Athletic Football Show had, it was a fun episode this week. Talking about, they're going to do both conferences, but they started with the AFC, ranking supporting casts. And both Robert Mays and Derek Klassen, both hosts of the show, actually came up the same ranking for the Jets. And that ranking was dead last as far as supporting cast. Now, they had, there's kind of three buckets that they used to kind of rate this. One was coaching staff. The second bucket was just flat out receiving power, right? Like, how good are your receivers? And then the third bucket was offensive line / running game, and how that can help a running back. So with that said, here's just a snippet of what they said, about the New York Jets.
Pass catchers, I think you can make a serious argument that the 2-4 options on the Jets are worse than the 2-4 options on any other team in the league.
Yes. I think that's ultimately where I landed, because almost all of these teams have at least like one player where you can rally behind, and then you're kind of just quibbling with, again, what does 2-4 look like? Or do they have a star tight end or whatever it is? The Jets have none of that, man. And when you add that on top of, again, young offensive line and a play caller we've not seen before, there's just so much uncertainty with all of this that it's just hard to feel good about anything other than Garrett Wilson will somehow get himself to 1,000 yards again.
You know what I just realized in hearing that is that I listened to my podcast in 1.5 speed, and I forgot to change it to 1 I did the recording. So that was 1.5
speed. We got through it faster.
We sure did. But that's how I listen to all my podcasts, because there's just not enough time in the day to listen at regular speed. But the part of that I wanted to pull out was actually the end, which is they did talk about Tanner Engstrand, and they went on to say, like, could be phenomenal. We just don't know. And it's hard to like put any positive spin on that when this guy's never done it before.
Yeah. So a few things, like, I think all their points are like broad strokes fair. I think it leaves out some things that I like. They didn't talk about the running backs. I think they have a really good running back room. I think
you're right. They didn't talk. They talked about the line and how it may not be as good as you think it might be. But you're right about the running back.
So I think I'm high on, like, generally speaking, I think this offense could be pretty good, but I do see the case for the opposite also. Like, I think it's fair to point out, you know, Breece coming off a bad year, Justin Fields question at quarterback. I know it's about the supporting cast around him, but, you know, we don't know what Justin Fields is going to be. You're relying on a second round rookie at tight end. Absolutely fair. The 2-4 receivers, I agree, are not good on paper. Like, that is not a good group. And the offensive line, like, I believe in Olu. I think he's going to be really good, but he wouldn't be the first young offensive tackle who, you know, didn't take the right step forward in year two or whatever. So I see all those points, but I disagree on, I think the interior offensive line is better than they say. I think John Simpson and AVT are pretty good players. Center, I like Joe Tippmann. He's competing for the job though. So, you know, maybe if you don't like Josh Myers, I could see being discouraged by that, but I feel good about that. And I understand why you don't know what you're going to get out of a rookie tackle. So we don't know what Armin Membo is going to look like. He's young. And I think Garrett is an absolute stud, and I believe in Tanner Engstrand personally. So if the offensive line's as good as I think it's going to be, everything else around it's going to work out. I definitely am concerned about the receiver room. Like, that's, I've talked about that. I'm not the only one. Josh Reynolds is going to be the number two receiver. He's probably best suited, as they said, as a number three or number four. Alan Lazard seems like he's purely here to block at this point. I like Tyler Johnson as like a third, fourth receiver. Maybe Arian Smith shows something, but outside of Garrett, like, Garrett, if you look at this entire roster, I don't know that they'd be more screwed than if Garrett Wilson got hurt than anybody else on this team. Like, maybe you can make a case for like Will McDonald or something like that, but, or Quinn and Williams, I guess. But like, other positions, they're better suited to lose somebody. You're not suited to lose your best player here. And that's the case in a lot of teams, but those would be all the concerns. So I see their points. I don't see this as the worst supporting cast in the league. The receiver room, if you just look at it on paper, does not look good. And if you don't believe in these young offensive linemen, then I could see why you'd think that. And to their credit, like, they even said they're open to the possibility that they are very wrong. Like they, they both just went there because of, I think, largely the receiver room. And I think when they said, I think they both said when they started out, like they initially didn't have the Jets at 16th. And then you look through the personnel and the depth chart and stuff. So I think there's a lot of questions, a lot of what ifs that need to go right for this to work. And number one is Justin Fields. Ultimately, if Justin Fields is not better than he has been, then this offense won't be good. And if he is as good as he can be, this offense could be really exciting. So, you know, I think the floor and the ceiling are pretty wide variance on this offense, maybe as much as any team in the AFC. I think they have a very wide, they could be the worst offense in the AFC. They could be a top 10 offense in the NFL. I think if everything goes really, really well, I don't think they'll be top 10, but I think like that's the ceiling because this could be the number one running offense in the NFL. So long way of saying like, I disagree with them broadly, but like, I think their points are also like fair if you're looking at it from a, you know, 1,000-foot view.
All right. We can't say goodbye. Well, we have a few more things to get to, but one we have to cover, Zach, was the quarterback play in Canada last night.
Yeah. Huge.
Chris Streveler filling in because of a suspension to the Winnipeg Zach Collaros. Chris Streveler steps in, ho-hum, 15 of 24, 246 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Just doing Chris Streveler things. Glad to see he's still on the field because there was a point where he was doing kind of like other stuff. Like it seemed like he was maybe trying to get into the media and but yeah. No, he's still going strong. And he played for Winnipeg last year and was kind of like their goal line quarterback. He scored a ton of touchdowns along the goal line.
I mean, he's just a winner. That's what it comes down to.
He's a winner.
I mean,
give the guy a cigar.
You know, it's been trippy watching Adrian Martinez in practice because he has Chris Streveler's number and he made a good play with his legs the other day.
I can't believe they gave that.
He's doing the number proud. I know. I thought they would retire it or something. It's like the Giants talking about giving away LT's number. Like, I don't know. I'm happy for Chris. I would say I am for those who are thinking about going to the next Badlands live show, which is August 23rd in New York. You should get tickets if you haven't yet. It's going to be really fun. There's going to be a lot of people coming. I think you might even be able to come this time. You're trying. Yes. Might be able to. I didn't commit to it for you. I'm researching like for Streveler. I'm researching Chris Streveler t-shirts to wear as my outfit for that day. So little teaser for people. I found some fun ones online. They do exist. People have made Chris Streveler t-shirts. So.
Of course they have. Colt legend.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going through the chat a little bit, and we missed this earlier from Brian Sternbeck. He said, is Jermaine on the PUP list to start training camp?
Yeah. Aaron Glenn said he anticipates that probably. They think he's going to be fine for week one. So, yeah, I'd expect Jermaine, them to slowly work him back in, which is going to give reps to, like, Michael Clemens, Rashad Weaver, Tyler Barron, Eric Watts, like some of the younger guys. Defensive end depth is an issue, but, yeah, they're not concerned about him for week one. He's one of the biggest X factors for this defense, I think, honestly, because we don't know what he's going to look like. They really, really missed him last year because he's good in the pass game and run game, and he's just a beast and a leader. But if he's not the same player, like it's going to be tough to find that production. So I'm very curious to see how he looks coming off the Achilles.
All right, and then Michael Dunn says, birthday's coming up. June 23rd, we won't have an episode coming out that day. So you begged for it, Michael Dunn 1A. We will grant your wish. Happy birthday, man.
Happy birthday, Michael. Have a great time.
And it's good that your birthday doesn't fall within the Jets season. It's good that it's in the summer because then can't be potentially ruined by a terrible loss or anything like that. So have a good one, Michael Dunn. Before we say goodbye, I think the last thing that we haven't commented on is the fact that Aaron Rodgers has a new home. It's in Pittsburgh, right? $13.6 million, I think, 1 year. That is the deal that the Steelers have made with the devil, so to speak. And we will see how it plays out immediately. Of course, in week one, the NFL was hoping that this would come through. And we even said it when we went over the schedule, Zach. If the deal had been done back then, maybe that's prime time.
Yeah, I think the NFL has said that. So Aaron Glenn, some of the guys have been answering it. Jermaine Johnson, it sounds like he's still tight with him. I think the defensive guys are maybe closer with Aaron than some of the offensive guys outside of Lazard. But Aaron Glenn, as the question was being asked by Brian Costello, he like starts laughing because he's like, I expected that to come. And then he finally finished the question and he's like, we have 17 games. We're excited to play all of them. Like, he just wouldn't bite. At some point, he's going to have to bite. Like, we're going to be asking him about them going against the other team's quarterback leading up to week one. He's going to get asked about that a lot. I'm curious to see if he maintains the discipline to not answer it and not touch it. Aaron Rodgers, in his first media availability, was like, if you're going to ask me to trash my previous organization, I'm not going to do that. He won't be able to bite his tongue at some point. He's going to say something.
Probably not in that setting, though. It'll probably be on McAfee.
Yeah, McAfee. What I'm curious about is, as we get closer, if you have guys like Garrett or Breeze kind of subtly taking shots at him or something like that. But
Breeze kind of already did, right? Like, very subtly, just by saying we're going to run the ball. Yeah.
Well, that, and he also had a, I don't know if this was as much a shot, but maybe could be taken, is that he had a quote about, like, you know, he's, we're all the same age, so we hang out on the weekends, we have the same, you know, likes, and we can bond in that way, kind of thing. I don't know. It's funny to me watching the Pittsburgh fan base talk themselves into it the same way Jets fans did. Although, like, there's more evidence that he's not good anymore. It is different for sure. But it was funny because I think going into it, there was a lot of Steelers fans that didn't want it. And if you look now, a lot of it's positive. I've seen a lot of, like, national spin. Like, the national spin has just been absolutely hilarious to me. Like, you're seeing these guys, and I'm not going to shout out anybody by name because they do a good job for the most part. But with this stuff, like, they're like, just watch the Jaguars game. The Jaguars were freaking awful last year. Aaron Rodgers, it took him until playing the shitty Jaguars and the very last game against a Dolphins team that was tapped out for him to have his best games of the season. Like, I do think he can be fine in the right environment, but do the Steelers have that? Like, I know they have Mike Tomlin, but you have an offensive coordinator that likes running the ball every play. You have an offensive line that I think is not very good. You have DK Metcalf, and outside of that, what do you have on that offense? They got rid of George Pickens. They have Calvin Austin as their number two receiver, Pat Freiermuth at tight end, I guess, Jaylen Warren at running back. They drafted a kid at running back. Rodgers wasn't there all offseason, and he demands a lot out of his players, so I don't see it working out.
That's really key to me too, is the fact that he just waited, and, you know, he skipped all the OTAs, and because that was very different than
he did. He did get married, like, he did get married like me within the last 2 months, though. So.
And he got married to
and
then just kind of flashed the ring.
So we both had this. We had this funny idea. I want to get our Steelers writer and maybe our Packers writer on here just to have, like, a therapy session with Mike DeFabo, who covers the Steelers, just to let him know what he's in for. As the thing comes up, we're at least going to get Mike on coming up. I got to hit up Matt too, but I don't know. It's kind of fun being on the outside looking in now, enjoying it in that way. I do miss the page views, and I do miss, you know, all the content to a degree. I also appreciate some level of boredom, especially as I was planning a wedding. So I'm not pissed that he's gone, but for content, maybe a little bit.
All right. And we'll see him again week one, when the Jets take on the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers. All right, that's going to do it for us. If the Jets do something crazy, or if there's some real big breaking news, we'll be with you. But otherwise, Zach, enjoy your honeymoon, and we'll basically be back to kick off training camp, or right before training camp. We'll take a little break of our own and recharge, and maybe come up with some new stuff for the show in that time too.
Yeah,
that's your assignment for when you're in Greece, is to reformat the podcast.
All right, I'll do some work. Samantha will love that. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you soon on Flight Plan.